Hello, this is your volunteer broadcaster, Cherise Stevens, bringing you today's Yuma Sun Daily with a look at life in and around Yuma. Let's start with local news. Our first local news story is titled, Hobbs Office Interviews Yuma County Superior Court Applicants, by James Gilbert, Sun staff writer. Governor Katie Hobbs' office interviewed applicants Monday for a judicial appointment to the Yuma County Superior Court at the Yuma County Historic Courthouse. A public comment period preceded the interviews held at 12:30 p.m. Eliza B. Johnson was interviewed at 1:10 p.m., followed by Claudia M. Gonzalez Jimenez at 1:30 p.m. The appointment will fill the vacancy created by the retirement of Judge Lawrence C. Kenworthy. Under the Arizona Constitution, Superior Court judges in counties with fewer than 250,000 residents are elected, but vacancies are filled by gubernatorial appointment until the next general election. Johnson, who has worked in a variety of legal roles, including a district attorney's office, public defender contracts, and the Attorney General's office, emphasized courtroom accessibility and clear communication with litigants. Many people who come before the court will only experience it once in their lives, so it's vital that they leave feeling that they were treated with fairness, respect, and transparency, she said. She highlighted ongoing efforts to implement a tracking system for domestic cases to reduce frustration and help parties navigate hearings more efficiently. Johnson also discussed the importance of active judicial engagement during oral arguments, saying judges should thoroughly review briefs and ask clarifying questions when needed, especially when parenting or jurisdictional matters. She stressed using language that promotes collaboration rather than framing cases as adversarial battles. Gonzalez Jimenez, a court commissioner since 2021, described her approach to hearings as focused on engagement, understanding, and efficiency. When I'm actively listening and engaging, I often ask questions to clarify the most important or salient issues, she said. She also emphasized the importance of following up after hearings, reviewing notes, and maintaining organization within her staff. She worked to make the court's resources more accessible, particularly for self-represented litigants, and has collaborated with law library and self-help centers to ensure forms and resources are up to date. She also noted that civil proceedings, such as extradition hearings, can be confusing and said she takes time to ensure respondents understand the process and their rights. Both candidates identified domestic relations cases as among the most challenging for the adversarial system due to their emotional complexity. Johnson highlighted mediation and settlement conferences as effective alternatives, while Gonzalez Jimenez emphasized communication and public accessibility to maintain trust in the judicial system. Members of the public were invited to submit written comments to azgovlegal@az.gov. through October 31st. The governor will consider public feedback, candidate interviews, and qualifications before making the appointment. The interviews are conducted by Sean Bergen, Chief Legal Counsel for the Governor's Office, and Emily Braley, Deputy General Counsel. Next, we have Scouting Event to Honor Leaders Service to Community, staff report. Scouting Arizona will host its annual Trail to Leadership Luncheon in Yuma on Wednesday, October 29, at the Yuma Elks Lodge. The luncheon celebrates individuals who exemplify the values of leadership, service, and dedication to youth development, principles that mirror those of the Scouting movement. This year, the event will honor John and Joyce Lobeck and Dan Mickles for their outstanding leadership and service to the community. The doors open at 11:30 a.m. There is no cost to attend, but space is limited and an RSVP is required. To RSVP, please contact Andrew Dilliner, Chief Development Officer with Scouting Arizona, at andrew.dilliner@scoutingaz.org. Guests will have the opportunity to make a contribution during the program to help keep scouting programs in Arizona affordable for local families. Proceeds from the event will directly benefit youth programs across the state, ensuring that scouting continues to inspire character, citizenship, and leadership in Arizona's next generation. Two local churches supporting Scouting Arizona, formerly Boy Scouts of America, programs in Yuma touching the lives of many boys, girls, and adults in the community, between Christ Lutheran Church and Sierra Vista Presbyterian Church, there are two Cub Packs, three Scout Troops, two for boys and one for girls, and one Venturing Crew. In addition, a new Cub Pack has been formed for homeschool children, sponsored by Yuma Silver Spur Rodeo. For more information about scouting in Yuma, visit bascout.org. Our next story is titled, Suspect Arrested in Attempted Homicide Case by James Gilbert, Sun staff writer. A Yuma man has been arrested in connection with a September alleged attempted homicide that left an 18-year-old critically injured, according to the Yuma County Sheriff's Office. Investigators identified and arrested 47-year-old Gilbert Perez of Yuma on Friday, October 24. Perez was booked into Yuma County Detention Center on one count of first-degree attempted murder. The arrest follows a weeks-long investigation into a reportedly violent altercation that occurred around 10:45 p.m. on September 11 in the 900 block of South Myrtle Avenue. Deputies responded to the scene, and they found an 18-year-old man suffering from critical injuries. The victim, who was reportedly acquainted with the suspect, was first transported by Rural Metro Fire Department to Onvita Health, then flown to a Phoenix area hospital due to the severity of his injuries. The YCSO Criminal Investigations Bureau took over the case shortly after the incident. The investigation remains ongoing. The Yuma Police Department provided valuable assistance and support at the scene, said Public Affairs Specialist Tania Pavla. Anyone with information related to the case is encouraged to contact the Yuma County Sheriff's Office at 928-783-4427 or 78 Crime to remain anonymous. Tips can also be submitted online at www.yumacountysheriff.org. Next, we have AWC Board Announces Preferred Presidential Candidate, Dr. Ritika Dewan, by Alex Ibrahimi, Sun staff writer. Dr. Ritika Dewan, CEO of Arizona Western Entrepreneurial College and Vice President of Workforce and Healthcare Programs at Arizona Western College, is being considered by the AWC Governing Board as the sole preferred candidate to replace Dr. Daniel Kaur as president. Kaur announced his retirement October 16 after 10 years of service. While no formal action has been taken yet, the board plans to hold a candidate forum and formal interview in the month of November. This direction is not taken lightly and comes with much conversation and reflection on how the board can best support the historic growth of the college and all the progress made across the district, said Board Chair Dennis Booth in an AWC press release. We also really care about ensuring stability, considering various pressures and rapid change in higher education trends. We are considering Dr. Dewan's candidacy with a deep sense of responsibility for the students, the families, our employees, and the communities we are elected to serve. College faculty, staff, and students are invited, along with the community members, to participate in this conversation at any one of the following four candidate town hall events, which will be open to both internal and external audiences. November 5, 1:30 p.m. Yuma Campus, Matador Activity Center, MAC 106. November 5, 5:30 p.m., Yuma Campus, Matador Activity Center, MAC 106. November 6, 9 a.m., San Luis Learning Center. November 6, 3 p.m., Parker Learning Center. AWC Chief Human Resources Officer Kathy Ocampo will moderate a conversation with Dr. Dewan at all four town halls, and the audience will have a chance to contribute written questions. If a person cannot attend one of these town halls but has a question for the District Governing Board to consider, they may reach out to presidenttransition@azwestern.edu. As part of the vetting process, we sincerely hope you will come to one of the forums to listen to Dr. Dewan's presentation, to hear her answer questions about the position, and to ask your questions, said Olivia Zepeda, Board Secretary. We are very inspired and energized by Dr. Dewan's teaching roots and her demonstrated leadership. In considering Dewan as the sole preferred candidate, the board reflected on her journey, which began in the classroom in 2001. And has grown through years of teaching, mentoring, and leading with purpose. From her first days as a math and physics teacher to her current role as CEO of the Entrepreneurial College and Vice President of Workforce and Healthcare Programs, AWC credits Dewan for demonstrating an unwavering belief in the power of education to change lives. Her leadership is rooted in faculty collaboration, shared governance, and student success, AWC stated. Throughout her career, Dr. Dewan has combined academic integrity with innovation, expanding AWC's reach through new programs, partnerships, and transformative grants. At her core, she remains an educator who values the art of teaching and the shared commitment of faculty and staff who make AWC's mission possible. Dr. Dewan's experience in the classroom, her leadership in the transfer academic area, plus her transformation of the college careers and technical education areas, make her our leading candidate for consideration to steer AWC into the future, added Board Chair Dennis Booth. Any formal action by this board will take place after the November town halls and candidate interview. The District Governing Board is comprised of the following members: Dennis Booth, Board Chair, District 3; Brad Sale, District 1; Dr. Kenneth McFarland, District 2; Olivia Zepeda, District 4; Maria Chavoya, District 5. Additional information about the District Governing Board can be accessed on the college website, www.azwestern.edu/about/district-governing-board. After 10 years of service, Core formally announced his intent to retire at the end of this academic year on October 16, at the end of the regularly scheduled District Governing Board meeting. You are listening to the Yuma Sun Daily with Charisse Stevens on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Continuing with local news, U.S. Marshals lead multi-agency sex offender compliance operation in Yuma County, by James Gilbert, Sun staff writer. A week-long sex offender compliance operation led by the U.S. Marshals Service in partnership with Yuma County Law Enforcement resulted in the verification of 26 registered offenders and the arrest of two others, officials announced. On October 17 through 24, deputies and officers from the U.S. Marshals Service, Yuma County Adult Probation, and Yuma County Sheriff's Office, along with several state and federal agencies, conducted checks on nearly 30 registered sex offenders throughout the county, including Yuma, Somerton, San Luis, Dateland, and surrounding areas. These operations are significant to our partners and the Marshals as they provide a way to ensure compliance for high-risk sex offenders as we continually strive to protect our communities and prevent future victims, said Van Bayless, U.S. Marshal for District of Arizona. Of the offenders checked, 26 were found to be compliant with registration requirements. One offender's registration could not be verified and remains under investigation, while two individuals were arrested on unrelated charges, officials said. Protecting our community, especially our children, is always a top priority, said Public Affairs Specialist Tania Pavlak of the Yuma County Sheriff's Office. We value our partnership with the U.S. Marshals Service, which helps ensure offenders remain in compliance and our neighborhoods stay safe. This successful operation is a strong example of what can be accomplished when local and federal agencies work together. The operation highlighted the effectiveness of law enforcement collaboration, officials said, noting that joint efforts such as this one enhance public safety by pooling resources and information. The compliance checks were part of the Arizona Wanted Violent Offender Task Force, a multi-jurisdictional fugitive apprehension unit led by the U.S. Marshals Service. The task force, which includes 22 federal, state, and local agencies, was responsible for more than 1,700 arrests in the past year, including the capture of violent offenders and sexual predators across the state. Our next story is titled, Honoring Our Hometown Heroes by James Gilbert. Honoring Our Hometown Heroes, October 28, makes National First Responders Day, a time to recognize the brave men and women who serve our community with dedication, courage, and compassion. From law enforcement officers and firefighters to paramedics, dispatchers, and EMTs, these individuals are first to answer the call when help is needed most. Here in Yuma, our first responders go above and beyond every day to keep our community safe and strong. The Yuma Sun is proud to honor their commitment and sacrifice, recognizing their courage, compassion, and commitment. Next, we have Jeff Woodruff, Answering the Call and Never Looking Back by James Gilbert, Sun staff writer. What began as a chance conversation at work turned into a nearly four-decade career in emergency service for Rural Metro Fire Department Battalion Chief Jeff Woodruff. Before he ever donned a uniform, Woodruff was working for the Welton Mohawk Irrigation and Drainage District. One day, a co-worker who also worked for an ambulance company asked if he'd be interested in becoming an emergency medical technician, even though he didn't yet know what an EMT was. She said, "Would you be interested in becoming an EMT?" Woodruff recalled. "I didn't even know what that was, but I told her, sure, if you're paying for it, I'll go. And I went, and I liked it." That decision set Woodruff on a lifelong path of public service. He spent 9 years working for both the Irrigation District and Tri-Valley Ambulance, advancing from basic EMT to immediate EMT, a level of certification no longer used in Arizona, but one that allowed him to perform nearly all the duties of a paramedic. "I was really fortunate," he said. "Both companies supported me and even let me leave work when calls came in because there were so few providers in the area." Encouraged by his peers, Woodruff eventually enrolled in a paramedic program, which led to his hiring by a Rural Metro Fire in 1996. The department paid for the remainder of his paramedic training as well as his fire academy. "In 38 years, I've never had to pay for a single class," he said. "I've been really lucky. Somebody always thought I was worth investing in." Woodruff has since earned certifications in critical care, transport, and flight paramedicine, and he's served the community as both a medic and firefighter throughout Yuma County. Though he could have retired by now, he said he still enjoys the work and the opportunity to guide the next generation of first responders. "It still feels good, so I keep working," he said. "It's rewarding to see the young firefighters grow. I'm sure the guys above me watched me the same way." For Woodruff, the job is about far more than answering calls. This isn't just like a job flipping burgers. You're showing up on someone's worst day. And even if all you can offer is a calm voice, that might be exactly what they need. He encourages anyone considering a career in public safety to do a ride-along before committing to the field. "It's not all fires and rescues," he said. "A lot of what we do is helping people who've fallen, checking on someone who can't get up, or providing medical care in the middle of the night. You have to make sure this is really what you want to do." Today, Rural Metro's crews respond to a wide variety of calls across a large portion of Yuma County, assisting departments in Somerton, San Luis, Welton, and Yuma when needed. Most of their calls, Woodruff said, are medical rather than fire-related, but every response matters. We probably handle more fire responses than most agencies because of the size of our area and the number of brush fires, he said. But the majority of what we do is medical, helping people when they need it most. Our last story is titled, Dems Speak Out on Climate Change, Urge the Colorado River Protection, by Josh Bootson, Sun Staff Writer. The Sierra Club organized a press conference with state and federal representatives at Gateway Park Monday afternoon to discuss climate change and take questions from the public on how lawmakers are planning to sustain the Colorado River for future generations. In attendance were Democrats, U.S. Representative-elect Adelita Grijalva of Arizona's 7th Congressional District, and Arizona House Representative Mariana Sandoval, as well as San Luis Councilmember Lizeth Servin and Sierra Club Colorado River Task Force lead Carrie Meister. We're here today to highlight the plight of the Colorado River, the impacts climate change have had on the health of the river, and to call on the Trump administration to stop the rollback of important climate protections, said Sandy Baugh, director of the Sierra Club's Grand Canyon chapter. The Colorado River is not just a river, it is our lifeline, Grijalva said. It sustains 40 million people, more than 30 tribal nations, our farmers and cities, and it is the heart of the Grand Canyon, one of Arizona's greatest treasures and economic drivers. But the Colorado River is in crisis, Grijalva continued. Climate change is driving record droughts, extreme heat, and wildfires. Lake Mead and Lake Powell are facing dangerously low levels, and Deadpool is a real possibility. That would devastate the Grand Canyon and threaten water supplies for families across the Southwest. Grijalva warned families that Arizona's water allocations may be reduced in the post-2026 Colorado River agreements between the 7 basin states. Every basin state must contribute to a sustainable long-term solution, Grijalva said. Southern Arizona is doing their part to conserve. Arizona farmers are making sacrifices. California farmers must also do their part. The drought contingency plan and the interim standards of 2007, unfortunately, have not gone far enough, and there are some very hard decisions involved in retaining the sustainability of the Colorado River, Meister said. Grijalva further criticized the Trump administration for rolling back climate protections at a time when critical lifelines like the river are constantly diminishing. They're gutting clean energy investments, repealing carbon and methane pollution limits, and even threatening the EPA's authority to act, Grijalva said. We should all be strengthening protections for our water and our climate, not tearing them down. The Colorado River is about our water, our future, and our children. We cannot let this lifeline run dry, Grijalva said. I'm calling on the Trump administration to stop rolling back climate protections and to work with us to secure the river for generations to come. Our families, our tribal nations, our farmers, and our future depend on a healthy flowing Colorado River, and strong action on climate is needed now, Sandoval agreed. Servin echoed Grijalva's claims, expressing her nervousness for the state of the river that allows the Yuma and San Luis region to supply winter vegetable crops across the nation. The Colorado is our lifeblood, but it's overallocated and running lower every year, Servin said. More than 20 years of drought caused by climate change puts all of us in danger, not just those of us where the river now ends. Servin warned of the possibility that Arizona's reservoirs, Lake Mead and Lake Powell, lose enough water to reach Deadpool, meaning the water levels would be so low that the dams would not be able to generate hydroelectric power for nearby population centers. Meister shared that Lake Powell decreased by 33 feet just this past year to keep Lake Mead above a Tier 2 shortage, which would come with additional cuts that the state is not ready to face. Servin also remembered a time when she was a young girl that the river still flowed to the Sea of Cortez, its natural destination, but it currently barely trickles into Mexico at all. There was a plan, real conservation efforts, billions of dollars in funding to reduce demand and incentives to save water and plan for the future of the river in communities like mine. But because the Inflation Reduction Act was passed by the previous administration, it immediately became under attack when the new administration took over. This is the kind of partisan short-term thinking that will cause damage to everyone in our region, Servin said. Without the Colorado River, there is no Arizona, Servin said. Let's get back to work on preserving the Colorado River for future generations. That is all the time we have for this article as we wrap up this section of the Yuma Sun Daily. The weather forecast for this week, starting with today, Wednesday, October 29th, will have a low of 67, a high of 94 degrees, with an average humidity of 17%, and winds in the 6 to 13 mile per hour range. Thursday will see a low of 64, a high of 92, an average humidity of 19%, and 2 to 7 mile per hour winds. Friday, the low will be 60, the high 89, with an average humidity of 39% and winds in the 2 to 4 mile per hour range. Saturday will see a low of 61 degrees, a high of 89 degrees, and an average humidity of 39%. Wind will also be in the 2 to 4 mile per hour range. All of this week, the UV index of 5 to 6, which is rated as moderate to high by the World Health Organization, who also recommends sun protection daily from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We are at the conclusion of today's Yuma Sun Daily program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Cherise Stevens. Thank you for tuning in today. If you missed any part of this program, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and listen to it on demand under broadcast info and audio. The Wall Street Journal is next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.